Marx follows the ever-changing landscape to discuss the latest pressing issues relevant to brand owners in Europe and beyond. During this series, Marx members and special guests share updates, experiences, and opinions. This is IP Law Today. This is Talking Marx.
Hello, and welcome to the Talking Marx podcast. I'm James Nurton, the Marx editor, and I'll be hosting today's podcast. 2024 was a very significant year for design law. In November, WIPO member states agreed the Riyadh Design Law Treaty, following many years of negotiations. And in Europe, we saw the passage of the EU design reform, comprising the recast directive on the legal protection of designs and the amending regulation on community designs. To discuss these developments, I'm joined today by three members of the Marx Designs team. They are Inga George, who is co-chair of the team and a partner at Bösling IP in Hamburg in Germany; Sally Britton, a partner at Mishcon de Rea in London, UK; and Sara Söderling, associate partner and attorney at law at AWA in Malmö, Sweden. Welcome to all of you.
Hi, James. Thank you for having us.
Yes, hello. Nice to be here.
Great to be here. Thanks, James.
So members of the Marx Designs team have been very involved in the discussions leading up to the Design Law Treaty and the EU design reform. And in this podcast, our contributors will both explain their significance and provide a few insights into the process that led to the agreements. So to give us some context, Inga, could you tell us a little bit about the Marx Designs team and the projects that you've been working on over the past year?
Hi, James. Yes, of course. I'll be happy to introduce the Marx Designs team. We have about 25 members who are IP practitioners and in-house counsel from countries from all over the world. And we all share a special passion for design law. One of our team's main objectives is to monitor and, as far as possible, also influence developments in the legal in the field of design law. And we always promote the viewpoint of right holders and legal practitioners, of course. And this is mostly done by participating in formal consultations, which are conducted by IP offices or legislative bodies, such as WIPO, EU IPO, or the UK IPO, for example. And in fact, as you mentioned, at the end of 2024, two major pieces of this design legislation have been passed, which we, as the Marx Designs team, have been actively involved with and monitoring for many years. The first one... And the first one, which you have already mentioned, is the Design Law Treaty, adopted in November 2024 and during a diplomatic conference in Riyadh. And it actually took over 20 years of negotiations to finally reach this international treaty, but which is now commonly viewed as a milestone in international design law. So, and the second one is the EU Design Law Reform. And that one was adopted by EU Council in October 2024, and it actually just recently entered into force on December 8th, 2024. So very recently.
Very good. Thank you. And so maybe starting with the Design Law Treaty then, and turning to you, Sally, can you just tell us a little bit about why it's important and what exactly was agreed in November?
So the Design Law Treaty is a formalities treaty, and the intention of the Design Law Treaty is really to make it easier, more affordable, faster for designers and brand owners to achieve protection internationally for their designs. It's long been recognised that design law, the lack of harmonisation, is a real barrier to brand owners in terms of seeking protection internationally, has led to increased costs and also complexity for them on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, so it's quite significant then. And what are the most important features, do you think, of the treaty?
So As I've said, it really seeks to kind of standardise and minimise the requirements for filing, just to kind of cut down on the complexity. One of the most significant developments from a brand owner perspective is the introduction of a grace period. Mm-hmm. The Design Law Treaty provides for a grace period of 12 months following the first disclosure of a design, and this won't impact on the validity of a registration. This is really of great importance to brand owners because previously brand owners with an international client base or customer base have had to kind of seek international design protection to preserve their position, which is incredibly expensive. It's also quite complex because just simply understanding where grace periods exist and where they don't exist is a huge barrier to design filing for many companies, mm-hmm. Not just for SMEs, but also for large brand owners as well without a large design kind of filing advisory contingent.
Because there's a lot of, it's a great diversity of systems around the world.
Absolutely. And you know, you could be seeking to launch something and just say the fact that, say, for example, China doesn't have a grace period means that you've actually got to file everywhere. And you might not know whether that design is actually going to be something that's commercially viable. So what the grace period allows you to do is to test and trial the design in the marketplace and then invest in those designs which are really going to add value to your business. Mm-hmm. In a similar vein, what's also quite interesting with the Design Law Treaty and really of great benefit to designers and brand owners is the fact that there is a provision to allow designs not to be published for at least 6 months after the filing date. Again, this is really valuable. If you consider something like the fashion industry as an example of this, you know, they may choose, there may be a key design that they want to seek protection of before a fashion show, but understandably they don't want that published before the fashion show because it kind of destroys the objective of the newness and the excitement of the fashion show if it's published on a design register somewhere before it takes place. Mm. It also sets a maximum list of indicational elements that designers must submit with an application. By establishing a closed list of elements, this will help create a more predictable framework for design protection procedures.
So that sounds like a couple of very positive developments. Is there anything surprising or unexpected in the treaty?
I think what's quite interesting in the treaty, it should be kind of noted that there's actually two sections to it, the articles, which are the treaty itself, and also the regulations. The regulations can be amended by an assembly of the contracting parties. And the idea of that is to kind of foster a more dynamic approach to design law, because you imagine it's a very much an area of kind of creation and the I guess there's a tension between creating international standards, but also allowing for an area of law which is by its nature very innovative. Mm-hmm. By way of example, so the article set that there is a minimum period for a design to remain unpublished and periods for things like non-compliance of filing requirements. But the actual timeframes are set in the regulations. So there's a bit more flexibility in relation to those. But if you look at something like the grace period, the existence of the grace period and the 12-month period for the grace period is actually set in the articles. So that is going to be much more difficult to amend because that will require a diplomatic conference to amend the articles. So that's a really interesting development from my perspective.
Yeah, interesting. And we mentioned this was agreed in Riyadh in November. What's the timing going forward for implementation of the treaty?
Yeah, so as you said, you know, 193 WIPO member states signed up to this in November 2024. And it now requires 15 contracting parties for it to enter into force. Mm-hmm. So the timing of this really depends on the member states and their ability to sign with the treaty itself. Mm-hmm. The signing of the treaty in Riyadh in November 2024 doesn't oblige them to contract to it. It's just an indication of their commitment to it. Mm-hmm. So using the UK as an example, my home territory, our government has a specific process for scrutinising treaties prior to their ratification and implementation. And I expect they'd also have to prepare legislation before that ratification. It's quite convenient in the UK, however, that we actually have a design consultation coming up. We expect it to come through in the next few months. So we expect that the UK OPO has considered this within its consultation.
Yeah. So realistically, it's going to be a few years before we get the requisite number of ratifications.
Yeah, there may be some territories which have more flexibility, but we can expect that there will certainly be a few years before we get to the 15 territories. But we'll be watching this space within the design team.
Yeah. And Inga mentioned, obviously, the Marks Designs team has been very involved over, I think you said, 20 years in this. Were you following the diplomatic conference, Sally? Were you sort of watching closely? I think it was streamed, wasn't it?
We actually participated in the pre-diplomatic conference in 2023. Inga, myself, and other members of the design team actually took part in that, which was really exciting. It was actually hybrid, and the actual conference itself was actually an in-person event. Mm-hmm. But obviously, we were following it very closely and the announcements in relation to it. And we also, as Inga mentioned, made various submissions in relation to it. In conjunction with other organisations.
Mm-hmm. And Inga, coming back to you, how will the designs team be monitoring the implementation of the treaty sort of going forward?
Yes, well, first of all, as Sally just said, it will be interesting which countries will sign and ratify the treaty. And we all hope, of course, that it will be as many as possible. And then the rules of the DLT must be implemented by the individual countries in their respective national law. It must be noted that the treaty does give some discretion to the countries, to the contracting parties, as on how to do that, at least for some aspects. So, of course, we will monitor that on a national level. And of course, then it will be interesting, like over time, to see how the treaty will affect our everyday design practice. But at this point, it's still a little early to completely oversee that.
Yeah. So the work's not over. The work continues for the team.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Good. Well, thank you. Well, moving on from the treaty then, perhaps we can talk about the EU design reform. Sara, can you give us an update on the latest developments and the timing of that reform?
Of course. So the new design regulation is due to take effect on 1st of May 2025. Mm-hmm. But there are certain articles in the regulation that will need to be further detailed in secondary legislation. And those articles will apply as of 1st of July 2026. And this includes, for example, the broadened definitions of designs and the new representation requirements. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to the new directive, the member states will have until December 9th, 2027 to transpose those provisions into national law. However, there are certain provisions, including the famous repair clause that I think we will come back to, which they will have a longer timeline for.
Yeah, okay. And you mentioned a couple of the key features already. Can you, I know they're quite wide-ranging, aren't they, the reforms, but can you highlight a few key points relating to design protection and prosecution?
Of course. So I think, the overall the application process will be simplified for EU designs. One new and one novelty that will be introduced is the fact that you will be able to include several designs in a multiple design applications, despite that the designs belong to a different Locarno class. And for those of you who don't know, the Locarno class is an administrative classification used to categorize designs based on product type. So you will be able to include design protection for different types of products in the same application. Mm-hmm. However, there will be a limit of 50 designs per multiple application. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to the formal representation requirements, the details are yet to be finalized when it comes to the EU designs. But the EU IPO will coordinate with the member states, and there appears to be an interest in having a large harmonization between the EU IPO and the national offices. Mm-hmm. So the regulation is quite modest when it comes to the details on representation requirements.
Okay.
Another thing which will be clarified under the new regime is that it will be explicitly stated that that there is no visibility requirement when it comes to non-complex products. So this opens up for the possibility to protect the projection of light, for example, which will only be visible as long as there is a light source. That seemed to be possible, even under the current regime, but that will be explicit now in the new law.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's quite big changes. And also, of course, the name is going to change, isn't it? So we'll have to get used to talking about EU designs rather than registered community designs.
Yes, that's
right?
True. That's true. And another feature is as well that they will introduce the D symbol to the R symbol or the copyright symbol. And I think it will be interesting to see to what extent the industry will actually adopt this and mark their designs with a D symbol and what commercial value it will have going forward.
Yeah, will people actually use it? Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I mean, the European Commission in their announcements about the reform have talked about updating the law for the digital age. I mean, what does that mean in practice? How does the law change from a digital point of view?
Well, so I think that you can see traces of that in different parts of the new regulation. I think it one is the broadening the definition of what actually constitutes a design. Now, in the new definition, it will explicitly include transition, movement, and other sorts of animations. So I think that this opens up for all sorts of digital designs, showing also I think the importance and the implications of the developments of the digital space. Mm-hmm. Another thing is that there will be the new definition of a product has been clarified to ensure that digital designs are properly protected, expressly including graphic works, logos, surface patterns, graphical user interfaces, and so forth. And I think also with the new representation requirements, now if you wanted to sort of portray and show a transition, you would have to show static images. But it seems to be with the new representation requirements that it will be possible to depict the sort of the movement and transition in a much better way, making it more suitable for the digital age.
Yeah, okay. So there are some interesting changes there then. Now, you've already mentioned the repair clause. I know this has been a big topic with a lot of discussion. Can you just explain briefly what it's all about?
Yes. So I think that the introduction of the repair clause for spare parts makes the end of the design protection for much match parts. So with the introduction of the repair clause, spare parts that are used to repair complex products, such as spare parts for the automobile repair sector, will be exempt from design protection. However, in those member states where this has been possible, they will be allowed a transition period of 8 years. So in practice, until 9th of December 2032, that will allow those existing national designs for designs that were filed prior to 8th of December 2024. So it's really allowing the industry to adapt to this new exemption.
So it's a very nice compromise solution.
Yes, you could say that.
And just one other question. Is there anything missing from the reform? Is there anything in particular that you wanted to see, that Marx wanted to see, that's not been included?
I think it's good when it comes to that, you know, that there will be opening up to this digital space and so forth. But I think when it comes to design protection, I think also maybe as a result of the fact that there is no substantive examinations of designs, it will really be to see when you try to enforce the designs, like what type of infringements will you actually be able to enforce against? Like how will this work in practice? So I don't necessarily think it's something that's missing from the reform, but I think it will be an interesting thing to see, and which will have a large impact, of course, on design protection and the use of design protection.
And Sara, are there any changes to fees that you're expecting?
Yeah, so when it comes to the application fees, they will be decreased, but when it comes to renewal fees, these will actually increase, and especially for sort of the second, third, fourth renewals of the EU designs. And this will enter into force as of 1st of May 2025. So if you have renewals that are due, you know, during 2025, it's advisable to do that before that date, because then you will enjoy the lower fees.
Oh, that's very useful to know, I think, for applicants and owners. Coming back to you, Inga, I know, or I believe, the designs team has worked with some other associations as this reform has been discussed over the last few years. I mean, how has that cooperation worked in practice? And is that something you think you'll continue to do?
Yes, in fact, we have filed two joint position papers together with INT and ECTA in the process of the EU design law reform. And that cooperation was really great. You could tell everybody is super passionate and knowledgeable about design law. And so even in light of sometimes very challenging deadlines, we were able to put substantial comments together. And those comments were, in fact, noted that we could see from later rounds of discussions and drafts of the legislative bodies. So, you know, we already mentioned that the design law reform covered a vast range of topics, and some of them were controversial. So here and there, you know, the associations had a different viewpoint on some aspects. Sometimes, you know, we had to respectfully agree to disagree, but that's a normal and very natural part of the academic discourse. So overall, you know, the cooperation was very fruitful, very enjoyable, and yes, 100%, we would be looking forward to working with them on future design law projects in the future.
That's very good to hear. Good. Okay. And Sally, you, I think you've already touched on developments in the UK. I mean, can you say any more about any plans to update the design law in the UK, which obviously is separate from the EU since Brexit? And you know, also, do you think this EU reform will lead to greater divergence between the UK and EU?
Okay, well, in terms of kind of a design consultation, I say watch this space. We had a call for views in 2022, which the design team put in submissions in relation to. And we expect consultations on substantive law and formalities to happen shortly. Understandably, the UKIPO has been focusing in its participation on with the DLT and various other things that have happened post-Brexit before issuing it, but we do expect it to come out very shortly, and we've already been discussing it in our team meetings. So I'm sure the design team will have an update on that shortly and will be participating and engaging in that. But with regard to divergence with the EU, there's always a bit of a tension in terms of achieving the optimum design protection, but also kind of harmonisation both with the EU and on an international basis. So we'll have to wait and see. We've already seen divergence in relation to case law in the UK, for example, like the Waterrow case that came out in 2024, late 2024 in the UK. So I guess watch this space. I think that will be addressed within the consultation. It'll be something that Marks will be following closely.
Well, we'll look forward to that as well then. Good. Thank you. We're coming to the end, but Inga, just looking forward, are there any other projects that the team's working on for 2025 and beyond?
Yes, of course. We will keep busy this year as well. And yes, well, right now we're reviewing the EUIPO design guidelines. Those need to be adapted to the reform, and the EUIPO has invited us to provide comments until the end of this month, until the end of January. We will do that, of course. And also, we are planning for Q1, like the first quarter of this year, we're planning a more detailed webinar for Marks members, giving them an overview of the changes being brought by the design law reform. And then, yeah, Sally mentioned there will likely be further consultations by the UKIPO relating to the comprehensive review of UKIP laws. So when that's happening, we're going to participate in that. And then, of course, we're still adding new content to our design tracker, which I would like to promote. The Design Tracker is an online tool on the Marks website, and it provides a country-by-country overview on the national design laws and filing requirements. And members have reported to us that they find it very useful. However, we do rely on the contributions of members. So because right now we have covered about 30 countries, but we actually do want to cover everything. We want to cover the whole world, right? So
we're working on that. 150 countries. Very good. Okay, well, and the Designs Tracker is available on the Designs team page, I think, on the Marks website.
It is, actually. It's public. It's public. Everybody can check it out and, give us feedback how it works. But,
And if anyone would be interested in finding out more or maybe contributing to that, they can contact you, Inga, and I think your details are on the team page as well.
Oh, yes, we would be very, very grateful for that.
Good. Well, please do bear that in mind. So it sounds like there's lots to look forward to, both on these two topics and others as well, in the field of designs. So lots more to discuss, but I think unfortunately we have come to the end of time for today. So I'd like to just wrap up by thanking very much Inga, Sally and Sara for taking part in today's podcast. And thank you also to everyone for listening. We'll have another episode of Talking Marks available very soon. But for now, it's goodbye from all of us.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Join us again soon for another podcast on an important issue for brand owners. To find out more on our website and guest speakers, visit marks.org/podcast.